All rise.
All rise.
The Honorable Chief Justice and
Associate Justices of the Supreme
Court of the State of North Carolina.
Yes, oh yes, oh yes. The Supreme Court of North
All
Carolina.
All of our citizens across the state depend upon us to uphold and protect both the spirit and the letter of the law, and to always apply the law fairly and impartially to every litigant who comes before this court.
God save the state and this honorable court.
Hello and welcome to All Things Judicial, a podcast of the North Carolina Judicial Branch. I'm Chris Mears with the Judicial Branch Communications Office. In today's episode, we feature a panel of three experts on the North Carolina Judicial Branch. Former AOC Director and Supreme Court Associate Justice Franklin Freeman, former Chief District Court Judge Ned Mangum, and former Wake County District Attorney Colin Willoughby. In the first segment, Franklin Freeman discusses the history of North Carolina court reform. This panel was recorded before a live audience in March 2024.
I want to talk a little bit about the court system, how it came to be. Colin's going to talk about the Superior Court system, a little bit about the federal courts. Judge Mangum's going to talk about the district court system. 1868, Reconstruction, North Carolina got court reform. Then we percolated along for 90 years until 1955 with no attention given to the state court system. The legislature, when some county, some town, some part of a county wanted a court, they would create a recorder's court. And so by 1955, we had over 180 recorder's courts scattered across the state, two or three perhaps in a county. We had 90 mayor's courts. We had 925 justices of the peace. And they particularly, but some of the judges, were paid in a fee system, where if you got convicted, if they convicted you, you paid the court cost. If they found you not guilty, you paid no court costs. A lot of convictions in those days. And so by that period, 55, 57, Governor Luther Hodges decided we need to do something. He asked the state Bar Association to form a committee to come up with court reform. They did. 59, the legislature didn't pass it. 61, they did. The people passed it in 62. And we had what was called, and it's still called, the General Court of Justice. And it established three basic levels. The appellate division, which sits at the apex of the system, the Chief Justice and the six associate justices are on the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeals immediately below, the Superior Court, which is the general trial court, trying all felonies and death cases to appeals from the district court and the district court. And then off of that, you have the support staff, the district attorneys, the clerks of court. Within the district court system, magistrates, Ned will talk about that. I want to talk primarily today about the appellate court system. We have seven justices on the Supreme Court. We've had seven since the early 1900s. They are elected by the people for terms of 8 years. One person is elected and runs for the office of Chief Justice. You can serve until you're 76. The legislature recently raised the retirement age for appellate judges to 76. From 72, it was across the board 72, but now 76 for appellate judges. Most justices serve a good long period of time, at least until the next election, which is what happened to me. I lost the election. But many serve, and some of the people I work with, some of y'all will remember people as far back as Bill Bobbitt, and Susie Sharp, certainly Jim Exum, and I know almost all of you, remember Joe Branch because he loved this club, came here, he loved Raleigh. Ms. Branch more than he, I think. But anyway, they loved Raleigh and retired here. The Court of Appeals was established in the General Court of Justice, in the court reform, to take some of the workload off of the Supreme Court. Originally, there were six judges elected for 8-year terms. The Court of Appeals was established beginning in 1967. If a vacancy occurs at either level, Supreme Court or Court of Appeals, during their term, then the governor appoints a replacement. The Supreme Court hears on direct appeal from the Superior Court all death penalty cases. They also hear discretionally any appeal from a criminal case from the Court of Appeals. And they hear constitutional questions on a direct appeal oftentimes. The Court of Appeals hears all criminal cases where someone wants to appeal from a conviction of the Superior Court. If you're convicted of a crime at the Superior Court level, you are entitled to an appeal to the Court of Appeals, except a death case, of course, goes directly to the Supreme Court. And the Court of Appeals also hears all civil appeals from the Superior, some from the District Court. Ned will tell you about domestic relations cases, juvenile cases. They work their way up to the Court of Appeals on appeal. The Supreme Court, primarily until recent years, had a heavy workload of death cases. North Carolina has a death penalty, but in recent years, juries have not been handing out as many death sentences as they used to, and the protocol for executing people in this state has been on appeal now since 2005, so there have been no executions in North Carolina since 2005. There are over 120 people on death row. Almost all of them have now had their cases heard by the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court recently has been focused on constitutional questions. One aspect of the court reform that people wanted to achieve was uniformity in the state. So that you didn't have all this mishmash of recorders' courts and justice of the peace courts. They all had the same jurisdiction. If you went court Murphy or Manio, you knew what the cost of court were going to be. You knew what the jurisdiction was, what court you should be in. All of the things that were mishmash before court reform in 1965 took effect. That is perhaps one of the great values of the General Court of Justice, is that the uniformity across the state in those things that we now take for granted. Whereas before court reform, a fine could be $100 for a criminal offense, a minor misdemeanor, in Pilot Mountain, where my father was a recorder's court judge, or it could be $150, as it was in Mount Airy, where there was a separate recorder's court, 15 miles apart. Those are some of the values of what's called the General Court of Justice. It has served this state well now for 60-some years. Little tweaks have been made, but by and large, it has proven itself to give the people a better sense of what their court system is like.
In the next segment, Colin Willoughby discusses the district attorney's office and how a criminal case flows through the court system.
I was district attorney, and the district attorney's office functions both in Superior Court and in the district courts. The district courts, all our misdemeanors and traffic infractions and those type of minor offenses come through there, as well as almost all of the felony cases. And so district court really functions like a MASH hospital. Everything in the world comes through there. They sort through and decide what's serious and what's can be repaired and sent on the way. And so they deal with a huge number of cases. Anywhere from this past year, I think it was about 80,000 cases. They've been up over 100,000 in different years. And in Wake County, our courts last year here disposed of more cases than were filed. So our backlog actually went down even during the illnesses and COVID restrictions that we've had. So they've been running over 100% of dispositions. But the kinds of things that go through there are a lot of alcohol and traffic matters. When your child gets arrested at Walnut Creek, or you get a speeding ticket, or your registration expires, those kind of things come through. And we also get some serious things, a lot of impaired driving and domestic violence and things like that. There are lots of programs available in our district court to try to divert people out of the system. We focus heavily on people that are first offenders to try to take kids, primarily kids with alcohol or marijuana charges, get them some sort of education, sometimes some community service, sometimes some treatment. But we try to do things to divert them out, to try to keep them from having a criminal record, get them out of the court system, and get them so that they don't come back to us again in the next few years. We also deal with high volume traffic cases, and I didn't see the numbers this year, but we've had in the past as many as 3,000 arrests for drunk impaired driving. It's 5,000 now. It's up. Things have increased since I was there, got out of the way, and it moved on. But it really is. I mean, that's largely because of the vigilance of your local law enforcement, the highway patrol, your municipal police departments, and sheriff's department. But they really do amazing job. But those felony cases that come through, they dispose of lots of them in the district court, but then thousands of them go on each year to the superior courts. And that's where we have the jury trials for once a case goes through the grand jury process, where 18 citizens who happen to get called for jury duty the first week of July or January may get seated on the grand jury. They hear the cases and decide whether or not there's enough evidence to send those cases on to the Superior Court for trials. Once they send them to the Superior Court, they go on calendars. The lawyers receive the information in the prosecutor's file, and they decide whether the case can be a guilty plea or whether it has to go forward and on to trial. In Wake County, the numbers for this past year are not really... we're not comfortable with what we've got yet, but we've had over 100 jury trials a year in Wake County. And many years we're the number one county in the state. We're ahead of Mecklenburg in the work that gets done here. And we have been up close to 140 or 50 jury trials a year in some years. Depends on whether they're long, complex trials or shorter ones, but that's sort of where it goes. Your Wake County jail, population is up. It's not because of a crime wave. Your crime statistics in Wake County are very low for the lowest of the urban areas in North Carolina. But we have people doing more serious things. We have about 1,500 people in the Wake County jail that are held in custody. Sheriff Rowe, Willie Rowe, has to keep those people there and hold them pre-trial until their cases are resolved. A few of them get misdemeanor sentences and get sentenced and have to stay in the jail for 30 or 60 days, but most of the people there are awaiting trial on more serious cases in Superior Court. It's expensive. It costs probably in the upper 30s to $40,000 a year per person to keep folks there. And I remember a few years ago we were in a meeting and there were some business people from the community, and they said, "Well, that's terribly expensive." I said, "Why do we spend so much money? You can send and this is you can tell it was years ago." He said, "You could send them to Duke for less than that." And we said, "Well, yes, but Duke is not taking them." And so we have to take them, and we have to keep them there, and we have to provide security for them. So we do that, and we send them on. Your Wake County District Attorney's Office has 44 assistant district attorneys in addition to Lauren Freeman, the elected district attorney. They have 44. Nationwide, the average is about one prosecutor for 10,000 people. We have about 1.1 million here. If we were at the national average, we'd have 110 prosecutors. So she gets by with 44. The state work study says that she needs 58. So they are considerably understaffed. And when you get down there and you see long lines in court and you see people stacked up, that's one of the reasons is we operate on a thin margin. Like my plumber Buster Johnson said, we have three things in the service business: fast, good, and cheap. And we can do two, but we can't do three. You know, we can do fast and good, but not cheap, or cheap and fast, but not good, or, you know, but we can, we do what we can with what we have. And we wonder where all this business comes from. And I tell folks, most of it comes from the seven deadly sins. You know, they were popular in the 13th century. They are still with us. You know, wrath, greed, lust, gluttony, they're still with us, and keep betting on them because they're going to be with us as we go through. But they're there, and so much of our work is driven by substance abuse. Alcohol is probably the biggest serious problem. We have drugs are a serious problem, but substance abuse is a significant driver of our criminal system. Mental health, the lack of mental health facilities and treatment is one. The biggest mental health treatment facility in Wake County is the Wake County Jail. That's where everybody's there, and they don't get much treatment, but that's where we house them. And the third thing, and this is a little controversial, but I'll say it, the easy availability of firearms. In our juveniles, we've raised our juvenile age, and many kids that are 16 and 17 used to be adults in our criminal justice system are now juveniles. And that's probably a good thing for many of them, but we also have a number of violent folks who've come up. Gangs have expanded across this country. We have a lot of younger people who are involved. They're wise enough to know that there's not much that the system can do to them. You've seen what happened in the terrible, it's not gang, but the terrible mass murders out in Headingham, where, you know, a 15-year-old did that, and it will probably take 2 years to get that case into court because of some of the difficulties of dealing with juvenile cases. Our system hasn't developed well enough to move those dangerous juveniles, the ones that, you know, do armed robberies and aggravated assaults and sexual assaults and homicides. We have to deal with them different than we do kids that break in somebody's garage and steal beer from the refrigerator, or you know, smoke weed at Walnut Creek and that sort of thing. And so those are sort of where we are. I'll touch on our federal courts. Our federal courts, our state judges are primarily elected. Our federal judges are appointed. They get appointed for life. They get confirmed by the Senate. Our prosecutors in the federal system are appointed. Our state prosecutors are elected. But the President of the United States appoints our federal prosecutors. We have three districts in North Carolina, the Eastern, Middle, and Western. We're in the Eastern District, which is 44 counties from Raleigh to the coast. The president can appoint a new U.S. attorney at any time that she or he pleases. And that person is responsible to carry out the prosecution for federal crimes in the district and to represent the federal government in civil cases. If the federal government is sued in a civil case or has to sue someone, that office carries forward that civil case or prosecutes the criminal case. The volume is much different. We have 80,000 cases filed in Wake County in a year. They probably prosecuted 1,000 or 1,200 defendants in the Eastern District of North Carolina last year. They get lots of different cases. Some are very, very serious. Some are multi-state conspiracies and things that we couldn't handle in the state system. But there's a much different, where we're more a MASH hospital. They're doing more refined surgery over there and dealing with sometimes very sophisticated frauds, dealing with large-scale drug trafficking that may go over different states or different countries and a different category of cases. But that's sort of how our federal system works.
In our last segment, Judge Mangum discusses the district courts, court funding, and the integration of the e-courts initiative.
My service as chief district court judge, I was responsible for holding court every day. I could be serving anywhere from hearing felony guilty pleas in one courtroom to involuntary commitments of the 7,000 IVC petitions we have a year in Wake County to child custody case. I left, you know, I've retired now. I just finished a 2-day custody trial over the last couple of days. So anything involving families and marriages, we deal with all juvenile delinquency cases, all abuse, neglect, and dependency cases where your child protective services are. You know, we're in a system that is stretched pretty thin. An example of this is that every now and then we have to keep juveniles that we have no place to house that are in DSS custody in an office building because there's literally nowhere else to go for them. So it's tough work. The judicial system is a co-equal branch of government. Does anybody want to take a guess at what percentage of the annual state budget the judicial system gets? 10% is a pretty good guess. High or low? Under 3. Yeah, and having said that, the legislature was generous to the court system in the last session of the legislature. You know, they got most of the things right that the through the Chief Justice and the AOC director asked for, but there's a lot of need there. There's a lot of need there. If you think about it, when your roads are packed and your schools are packed, your courthouse is probably pretty full too, so we can use those resources. I was responsible for supervising 33 magistrates that work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at the jail to make sure that people are arrested, get quickly before a judicial official to make decisions. They hear thousands and thousands of small claims cases. So it is a high volume area of the courts. The district court makes up 93% of all court filings in our state. You know, we operated last February 2023, our court system on February 12th was a paper-driven system, the exact same way it was in the 1950s when they started the Bell Commission. We were operating on 1980s and 1990s computer software that, seriously, Franklin helped orchestrate, and we needed it in the 1980s. But on February 13th of 2023, we went from a paper system to an electronic filing system overnight. The biggest change that we have had in our state court system since the reconstitution of the courts in the late 1960s. It was that big of a deal. To say it was necessary is obvious. Nobody here goes to a bank that operates on paper. Nobody goes to a hospital or a doctor's office that operates on paper anymore. It's not without its bumps and bruises, but it's a big system that we operate in. One of the things, I was a political science major at NC State, and I have grown up despising the partisanship that we see in our world today. And I think one of the things that pushed me and made me want to be a part of our court system, it's the kind of the last place left that you can get R's and D's working together quietly, trying to solve people's problems. I'm a member of one party. Lauren, Franklin's daughter, is a member of another party. Our senior resident's a member of another party. We all work great together. They work hard. You have elected public servants that care about what they do, both R's and D's, and you never hear their name, which is the way it ought to be. Nobody's out there tweeting about it. Nobody's on television kicking each other under the bus, and that's one of the things that we are really proud of, and I'm honored to have served in our court system for the last 25 years. It was a really rewarding career. Now, I'm on to, as they were mentioning, you know, went out into private practice here recently, but it was an incredible reward to serve this county as judge and district attorney.
Thank you for listening to All Things Judicial, a podcast of the North Carolina Judicial Branch. You can find out more about the judicial branch by visiting nccourts.gov.